Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. For more information, visit culturecity.org.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to the Claire and Erica show.
You botched that so hard.
It's so rainy and dark. I literally have to hold a flashlight to see my show notes. I don't know what more can be expected of
For those of you joining for the first time, this is called A Few Things with Claire and Erica, a.k.a. the Claire and Erica show. This is a weekly podcast where we talk about our latest discoveries. It is an outgrowth of our newsletter called 10 Things that we send every Monday.
You're killing it.
Thank you.
Nailing
you go
it.
Back to that flashlight. You've got it. That is born out of a website called Of a Kind, where we sell the pieces and tell the stories of emerging fashion and home designers. You should be checking all of that stuff out. We're discovering all kinds of stuff.
Come spend your money with Of a Kind and then donate some to Heritage Radio Network if anything's left over.
Yes. For 100%.
Now is the time to do it while you can still count it on your 2015 taxes.
Great idea.
I'm no personal finance expert, but
nope.
That's my disclaimer.
So because it is the coldest, dreariest, rainiest day, we like at the subway stop split up so we could each make it on our own to the radio station.
I'm not wearing any shoes because I have napkins stuffed inside my shoes right now because they're so wet.
It's gross.
And I'm holding a flashlight up to my show notes because the natural sunlight that usually pours into this radio studio is not present.
Gone.
But you know what? Anything for you guys. We still showed up.
We're here. Showing up. So, I feel like it feels very topical today because we're talking about wine and cheese, things you want to cozy up with.
100%. I mean, it doesn't need to be raining for you to indulge in wine and cheese.
No, absolutely but not.
Any excuse.
Yeah. So cheese, that's what we're going to talk about first. We're going to do a deep dive into cheese.
We have to start with the one thing that I couldn't sleep last night because I lay in bed thinking about this. When we were discussing this topic, our newish editor, Liz Sheldon, divulged that she in college dressed up as a Kraft single for Halloween and she was single.
It's brilliant. Okay, so here's how you do it if you're in the market for a last-minute Halloween costume, because we're going to talk about cheese on next week's episode, but we had to bump it up because this Halloween costume just seemed too fitting.
Oh my God, it's so genius.
So you buy the egg carton mattress topper situation that you know that everybody has on their dorm bed. You fold it in half so that the smooth part is on the outside. You spray paint it yellow.
Yeah. Didn't she put a yellow garbage bag on?
No, she spray painted it yellow and that's a clear garbage bag. Jumping way ahead.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Okay.
You basically wrap it around your torso, have a hole for your head, space for your arms, and then you put a clear plastic garbage bag over it with a hole for your head. It is brilliant.
She looked amazing. You obviously have to do the Kraft logo in the middle. She looked awesome. She was a Kraft single, and there's no better Halloween costume than that I know of.
No, and also warm.
Warm too. She looked amazing and it made me feel really good that this person is on our team. And you know, kudos to you, Liz.
Kudos.
You're the
kudos.
Best cheese. You're the cheese. You're the big cheese.
Yep. Since we started lowbrow, I think we should stay there.
Okay.
So we're gonna talk about fancy cheese too, but give us a minute. We'll work toward that. So what are our other favorite lowbrow cheeses?
I think Prevelle is the lowest of the brow, the lowest of the brows.
Does anybody know about Prevelle cheese that isn't from the Midwest or doesn't live in St. Louis?
Well, Liz, our engineer, is doing like a dance, so she definitely
knows.
But
she's from the Midwest. She's from Illinois. Girl knows. So Prevelle cheese, if you don't know, is this white processed cheese that is part of, as the show notes say, St. Louis cuisine. I don't know if cuisine is the word, but it's like... It's part of St. Louis pizza culture for sure. So it
like
is this
idea of St. Louis cuisine, yeah, thing, just like California cuisine, which absolutely is also,
which
like,
is also
what is
should
that?
Not be a thing.
Yeah.
So it's part cheddar, part Swiss, part provolone, and they're all mushed together, and it has this Velveeta-y melty consistency.
Sounds great to me.
It is. You have to like that, like, mouth coatingness idea.
I do like that, but my issue with a lot of these types of cheeses is it tangy? I don't like, no, a buttery cheese that with no tang.
No, it's really it's smooth. It's smooth is how I would describe it. So if you want to try this, if this is something you're interested in, you can, one of two routes for you. You can either order pizzas from Emo's Pizza in St. Louis and have them frozen delivered, or they actually just sell Provel on their site that they will also overnight to you, because it's really hard to find.
And apparently it's keep well because they have to overnight it.
Well, I think cheese in the mail, you should always kind of...
Fair.
Unless it's like December.
Yeah.
Or you can go to Speedy Romeo's in Clinton Hill, not to like be talking about other pizza places, other New York pizza places in the presence of this pizza place.
I don't
think
Roberta's feels like
that about it.
Like that about Speedy Romeo's, because it's more of like a what is the thing? Rising tide lifts all boats. They're such different pizzas, right? Like I don't think they feel like competitors.
So Speedy Romeo's does St. Louis style pizza right here in New York. Yeah.
Is it good?
It's delicious.
Well, we don't go negative, so you wouldn't tell me.
No, it is. It's delicious. It's delicious.
Creeping up the ladder ever so slightly, should we jump to cottage cheese?
Yes.
Cottage cheese. I ate it all the time when I was a kid. It was my mom's like quick lunch for us on the weekends, cottage cheese with canned pineapples.
Same.
It's delicious. And I stopped eating it for a really long time, and then somehow recently in the last like year or so I rediscovered it as a really great healthy quick snack or meal. And you can, much like yogurt, you can use it as a savory thing. You can make it sweet. It
like, when you go savory, what do you put in it?
Tomatoes, black pepper.
Black pepper, I feel like, is like a really key component of a savory cottage cheese.
Nuts. I don't, you know, it's a good, I'm trying to think what else. Maybe like some avocado. Anything you would put in savory yogurt, I think.
Yeah.
I don't go savory with it nearly as often, but Chris, my husband, will eat just it with black pepper, like on its own all of the time. And I'll eat it just straight too as a quick lunch or a snack, and it's delicious. And you know, I this is like my moment in the sun. I said last year, I was like, this is going to be the new yogurt, it's going to be the new like artisanal trend. And then we were,
it's going to take over for artisanal pretzels. It's exactly. Like the thing that we're all doing.
And we were in Farm Shop in Brentwood Country Mart late last year, and lo and behold, artisanal cottage cheese with cream on top by this company Kelowna Supernatural was being dished out.
Amazing. And so this has also taken the sort of restaurant world. Houseman in New York, which is this new spot from a former chef at Prune, has on their menu slowly roasted carrots, cottage cheese, pumpkin seeds, marjoram. Pumpkin seeds and cottage cheese. That's how you know it's happening.
That is the ultimate savory cottage cheese situation.
And it got a good review from Liz, the craft single, also.
They also, Bon Appetit had a really awesome cottage cheese chip dip recipe a couple years ago. It was like, it's just like really horseradish, I think, and salt.
Yeah.
And maybe you put one other thing in there, like maybe a little bit of mayonnaise or something. It's delicious.
But I like that it's texturally different from most of those dips that are out there that are all supposed to be super creamy and, you know.
It's so satisfying. I don't know why more people aren't buying cottage cheese. I would also just like to shout out Friendship brand. It's my favorite. If you're deciding between Breakstones and Friendship, both are great, but I really prefer Friendship.
Another our last cottage cheese note, because people are like, really? This has been three full minutes on cottage cheese. Apparently, cottage cheese on toast is trying to angle for a spot as a next avocado toast. Next avocado toast seems like a bit of a stretch for anything. I don't think anything should aim quite that high.
Okay.
But I like the idea of an alternative. And apparently in like the 60s, Weight Watchers introduced this as a healthy version of a cheese Danish.
And that's how Weight Watchers got a bad name. Because that's not a cheese Danish.
No.
Oprah's coming in to make sure none of that happens problem. Anymore. Yeah.
Should we? Okay. So a couple more lowbrow things. Queso.
Oh, so good. Queso. Just the like
slimiest,
cheese dip.
Cheesiest.
Yeah. The slimiest cheese dip that you have at Mexican restaurants, basically, which I had only ever really been able to access at a kind of lowbrow Mexican spot in Wilmington called La Tolteca, which Erica has been to, which I go to every time I'm home, which when the local newspaper in Wilmington covered Of a Kind, they opened with the fact that I love La Tolteca. So that's how aligned I feel with this brand. It's a white cheesy queso. And when we tried to make it, some friends of mine tried to make it at home, what we discovered was really, it's like, it's really hard to do because it's sort of a secret thing. It's really hard to get cheese that's liquidy like that.
Yeah.
And apparently, we are not the only ones who tried to do that. It's a challenging thing to do.
I feel like queso is definitely having a food world moment, at least in New York. And sorry that we keep shouting out like a million New York restaurants, but I think that in this case with the lowbrow cheeses, it feels very relevant. Mm-hmm. So Javelina has a big queso scene. It's a site of the harshest Pete Wells review that wasn't given out to Guy Fieri.
it was a really funny review. Yeah. I actually really like that place, but basically everything he said was spot on, which was that the service there is insanely fast and you're like out quicker than McDonald's.
Yeah. And that it's a really, really loud restaurant, which happens to really popular places really fast. Commodore in Williamsburg, El Cortez in Bushwick. The thing that I think needs to have a bigger New York moment or a bigger food world moment are cheese curds.
Ugh, yeah.
My husband's from Wisconsin.
And mine is from Minnesota.
Yeah, so there's like a lot of cheese curds
happening.
And not to say even better than cheese curds, because cheese curds are really wonderful and great, are whips.
I don't know what those are.
Okay, they're like cheese curds in that they're this sort of dense, chewy, squeaky.
The squeaky thing drives me crazy. It feels so. For those who don't know, cheese curds are some like version of the cheese, some byproduct kind of, right? Like it's actual cheese, but they are what they sound like. They're little curds. They're little pops of cheese.
It's like not pressed together into a form, basically.
They're little
the whey is pulled. Yeah, the whey is extracted, but it's not. Yeah, don't. Yeah, I'm not 100% positive on that, but it feels
right. Cheese experts. But the thing is that like a sign of a fresh cheese curd is if it's squeaky when you eat it, which really bothers me. It's like nails on a chalkboard for me.
That's fair. So the whips you would probably like better because they're basically fancy string cheese. They're sort of organically shaped.
Okay.
You can pull them apart or you can eat them as like a long strip. They're wonderful.
I mean, the best version of a cheese curd everybody knows is the deep fried cheese curd, which you can get at the Minnesota State Fair or a lot of the fast food Carvel. Is it Carvel? No.
No. Mm-mm, that's
the cake one. It's with a C. Oh man. Sorry, listeners. We're going to
failing you.
There's a fast food restaurant that has them.
Culver's.
Yep, Culver's. Hey.
But also, again, for New Yorkers who really want to eat shitty, delicious cheese all the time, the Dairy Queen at the Staten Island Ferry Terminal sells deep fried cheese curds.
Whoa.
Huge discovery. You are all welcome.
You might have just turned the ship of this episode around because I was like, I think if anybody has not already stopped listening, this is where they're going to continue to listen because that was a really great nugget of information.
Yep. Nugget. Cheese curd. Yeah. Yep.
That's basically what a cheese curd is. Yeah. A nugget.
Yep.
Okay. Let's get highbrow for a minute.
Just for a quick minute.
The most highbrow thing I know about cheese is Formaticum cheese paper, which now that I'm telling you, you're going to see it everywhere.
Everywhere.
It is a surprising omnipresent business, and I know it because a friend of mine used to basically be their head of sales, and we all kind of laughed when she told us we got this job because we were like, wait, you're slinging cheese paper for a living? What? But it's actually it is the best way to store your cheese. It prolongs the life of your cheese dramatically. So it comes in paper form the same way like parchment paper rolls out,
and it's like what the cheese shops have.
Oh yeah, totally.
Basically
you'll
see it
everywhere.
So the cheese doesn't sweat, it doesn't get that like moisture coating
exactly.
That makes it go bad faster. It keeps it fresh.
And then they also have bags, and then the bags come with little stickers so you can keep it fresh. So if you are serious about your cheese, and I feel like a lot of you are because who doesn't love cheese, it's honestly really worth investing in this stuff. I got a lot of it when my friend was working there, and it does help your cheese last so much longer. I buy Parmesan by the block because I just think for some reason the freshly grated stuff tastes so much better than the pre-grated, and so we just have tons of blocks of Parmesan in our fridge, and if you don't put it in the cheese paper, it really gets rock hard no matter how many Ziplocs you put it in or whatever.
And if you're going to spend like $20 on a nice cheese, you should probably take care of it.
Agreed. So, and I don't know of really any competitors. It's all about the Formaticum. You'll notice it now. It's white with black X's on it, and then there's some like cows and stuff in some of the X's.
The fanciest thing I know about cheese.
Tell me.
There are these cheese caves in Crown Heights right by my apartment.
What the F is a cheese cave?
It is where the cheese is aged. There's like this tunnel.
I feel like New York is kind of real estate, like expensive real estate.
Okay, so it's underground. Cheese. It's underground. So it's a tunnel.
It's cheaper underground.
30 feet underground.
Oh.
Yeah, because you got to have to, it's like, it's a cave. So for aging, you know, like basically the same thing as like cutting into the Greek mountainside, right? And aging cheese and wine there. That's where these things typically sometimes happen. Okay. Yeah. But it is a tunnel 30 feet underground in Crown Heights, and they're working with a bunch of cheese producers within like 250 miles of New York who bring their young cheese there, and then they age it.
Definitely a rapper name somewhere.
With a Z.
That's my rapper with name a Z. Anyway.
And so then they ripen it there, but you can check out their website and see what cheeses they age there and where to find them.
But you can't buy it.
They don't sell it. They're the aging caves.
Can any consumer go and visit it?
No, I think they do tours every now and again. I've looked into this, but they don't do it regularly. But you can buy the cheeses around the metropolitan area. But the tunnel holds 22,000 pounds of cheese.
Wow.
Whoa.
Can I invest in this? This seems like a huge opportunity.
I think it is.
Wow.
I
want to tell you about my fanciest cheese thing that I know. It's not really the fanciest, but it's the coolest. The other thing that I know, courtesy of my friend who used to sling cheese paper for a living, is the Cheesemongers Invitational, which is this huge, insane event inside. At least when I attended, it was inside a giant warehouse in Long Island City. And it's just all of these people who love cheese so much together. It's people selling cheese. It's people sampling cheese. There's all of these cheese games, like cheese contests, like who can take these three ingredients and make the best sort of cheese-based dish out of them. There's as you might have guessed by the name, the Cheesemongers Invitational, there is a contest for cheesemongers.
Yes.
So they had cheesemongers from all these fancy cheese places like Murray's and places you've heard of. And it was like, who can, without weighing, just by sight, cut exactly half a pound of cheese? And
so
who can get the closest, and then identify this cheese based on smell with a blindfold on, and give advice about, you know, not knowing what this cheese is, just taste the cheese, like what wine would you recommend to pair it with? So all these cheesemonger things, and like wrap up this piece of cheese the fastest. And I was researching this, and it bills itself as, think Burning Man meets Fight Club for cheese. Who would not want to attend?
Yeah, that's a lot of really compelling things, or like not even like oddly interesting things all wrapped up in one.
I don't want to go to Burning Man and I don't want to be part of Fight Club, but those two together in support of cheese, I'm in.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to go.
And the next one is in San Francisco, January 17th, so not too far from now. So if you are going to be in San Francisco in January, you should definitely attend. There's obviously just also so much free cheese involved. It's amazing.
Okay, one last thing before we go to commercial, because it is, we recently learned the term cuffing season, which is apparently what people call engagement season, which has started right now.
I didn't think it was engagement season. I thought what it was is, and you and I, you may be right, I have no idea, but my interpretation was that cuffing season is when all of these people have stayed single all summer to like hook up and have fun, decide to settle down with whoever they're Netflix and chilling with at that moment, and then you stay in a relationship until Valentine's Day, and then everybody breaks up right before Valentine's Day because they don't want to be responsible for, you know, that whole charade. But the idea is basically being single in the summer is really fun because you're running around going on vacation, but during the winter all you want is somebody to get on the couch with, Netflix and chill with.
I think my very, very brief internet research made it seem like it was also synonymous with like engagement season when people are like putting on the handcuffs or
I mean
like,
that
whatever.
Is that's fair. That is just a really deeply dark
it is dark yeah no
of,
for sure
of engagement
okay but we have to okay. we have to get going because
okay.
we're
we're oh now yeah we're going long okay bye
no, oh, no, no
no no we're not really buying we're no, just no. buying until commercial
the cheesecake That's what I wanted to say.
Oh, my God. Yes. The cheesecake. That's the most important
wedding
thing.
Idea.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry.
That's where I was
totally
leading
got
to.
Off track.
Yeah. So, <Tell me. laughs> so Claire's cousin got married 2 weekends ago. And what did she do
Shout
for her wedding
Shout out to
cake?
Julie and Justin. Their wedding cake was a literal cheesecake. It was just wheels of cheese stacked on top of each other. And it looked like a cake that was tiered. You know, the smallest wheel of cheese was at the top. But they didn't have a real wedding cake. They just had these giant wheels of delicious cheese. And the bottom one was a Swiss. And then I think, and then they had a goat. And then the top was blue cheese. And
so it was like the
awesome.
Most elaborate cheese plate basically yes. assembled in that way.
And it was decorated with flowers the same way a typical wedding cake is. And it was stunning. We'll post a picture of it on the recap. It was amazing and everybody loved it. And then they had cookies as sweets and it was so genius. I tried to convince my mother that we didn't need a wedding cake either because nobody eats that much cake and she wasn't going for it. But this was basically how my cousin convinced my aunt not to get a wedding cake. She was like, we're going to do a cheesecake instead. And we are going to just have cookies for people with sweet tooths. And it was amazing and awesome and everybody loved it.
Love. Okay, we're off to commercial. We'll be right back about wine.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Culture City, a for-purpose organization that provides a place of acceptance and support for all autism families. This is Culture City's founder, Julian Maha.
Culture City was really born out of necessity. You know, it was born when my, currently six-year-old boy was diagnosed with autism. His name is Abram and he's nonverbal. And even though my wife and I were both physicians at the time, it was really hard for us to find any resources at that point to help him. All the other organizations out there that we know of, they do phenomenal work, but their main focus is basically finding a cure for autism. Our main focus is basically trying to prepare the community to accept not only children with autism, but their families as well. You know, in addition to that, we also want to provide help to these families in the here and now. You know, so tangible things like, you know, iPads for nonverbal kids, you know, financial scholarships, therapy scholarships, you know, art camps, and also some lecture series that can teach parents about, you know, dietary issues, you know, how to financially plan and things like that.
For more information, visit culturecity.org.
Hi, we're back. We're back in action. You're listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. This is a podcast all about our favorite discoveries and things we're obsessed with. And one of those things is Kingston Wine Co. in upstate New York, Kingston, New York. So we discovered Kingston Wine Co. through a previous guest of A Few Things, Jamie Beck. It's run by some friends of hers, a married couple. And the wife is an amazing artist who we love, and the husband sort of runs the wine shop. And for, I guess it was Hanukkah last year?
Yeah, last year for Hanukkah.
I gifted Erica a wine subscription to Kingston Wine Co., and they sent her wine for, I don't know, a couple months. I don't know how long it was.
It was really lovely because Claire got to tell them my preferences.
Exactly.
And so I got, you know, the kind of wine I would normally want to drink, and it helped me discover things that were already kind of within my range. So they also sent recipe cards to go with it for suggested pairings. But it was really nice not to feel like you were being forced to try, okay, here's our like Merlot this month. Mm-hmm. It wasn't trying to open your eyes to something necessarily outside of what you are normally interested in, because I feel like that happens a lot with these things.
Exactly. And I think they'll do that well,
if you want,
if
that.
You want, you, yeah. know, you can buy into like a just trip, you know, a total survey of things. But I knew, and I said to Michael, our guest, I emailed him and I was like, Erica just really doesn't drink reds and she just really likes like sweet dry whites. And can we just make that?
Yeah. Dry white. Things? It's all about yeah. dry white. Yeah.
So, and he was like, sure, totally. And that was, it was one of my better gifts, if I do say so myself.
It was a great gift.
So Michael, are you there?
I am here, guys. I love it. Hi. Wine for Hanukkah.
Classic. Wine for
Classic
Hanukkah.
Classic Hanukkah gift. You guys just did such an awesome job. It was like everything that Of a Kind stands for. It was about the discovery. It was about the storytelling. It was servicey with the way you provided the recipes. And it was all beautifully designed, too.
Thank you. No, it's our pleasure. And I think, you know, combining all those elements are really important to us. You mm-hmm. know, I think to receive 2 bottles of wine every month mm-hmm. That isn't thoughtfully packaged, that isn't highly curated, that doesn't come with a human personal story. Well, I don't know. Anyone can do that, and there are a number of places you can go to get that. So we really place a high emphasis on approachability, design, taste, and the completely bowing down to the customer and giving them what they want.
That's so nice. And it's really perfect for us because Erica and I are both not really wine experts. And just
most people aren't. Yeah, and most people just want a little yeah, bit of direction.
Exactly.
And I think you guys are very good at delivering that.
I have so many questions for you, Michael, because we're not wine experts. And it is so... But I love drinking it. So we really need somebody to connect the dots for us. So we want all of the advice from you. My first question, which is a question I encounter, you know, on a weekly basis, is how do I know what wines to order from a restaurant menu? And do you have any strategy or tips around when you have this huge wine list in front of you and you're like, I don't know, man, I like an earthy red and I don't want the crappiest one you have. How do you approach this?
No, it's a great question. I mean, I think one of my pet peeves is that, you know, tomb that yes. Of a wine list that ends up in your lap. And, you yes. know, and even for a so-called wine expert, I think that's a difficult thing to approach. But what I would say is, you know, if, you know, for example, you know you like dry, crisp white, mm-hmm. I think these days the stereotype of the unapproachable, snooty, you know, wine buyer / sommelier at a restaurant, I think that that's fading very quickly. And most energetic sommeliers that you find at a restaurant or wine buyers or even waiters, let's say, are really happy to share their knowledge. So let's say you wanted a little bit of assistance and you were cozy with some assistance. Mm-hmm. I always like, you know, leaning on the expert and saying to them, I just want an Italian red wine at this price point that's some kind of earthy and funky, and kind of just let them do their magic, because I just think it's such a powerful thing as someone who's passionate about a particular product like wine for a customer to say, I'm all yours.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's gratifying, I think, to the server, and it's right. gratifying to the consumer. So that's like one of my top pieces of advice, if you feel comfortable doing that.
If you feel comfortable naming the price, which I think is a harder thing to do. Most people don't want to yeah. say, like, I want the cheapest thing you have that's still good, which is what most
not.
People want,
that.
Right?
It's so true. But, I also think that, of course it depends on the context, mm-hmm, you know? But I really believe that folks in my industry are completely into like
making everybody feel comfortable with this
yeah,
and get into
and
it. Yeah.
Price quality really yeah. matters. Yeah. It matters to me, and I yeah. think the general consensus is that it matters to most, you know, wine buyers, servers, and sommeliers. So if
right.
you say, hey, this is kind of where I feel comfortable being, give me your best quality to price ratio at this style, okay. and let them do their work.
Okay. So what if you're walking into a wine store that's not as wonderful as Kingston and won't hold your hand through this process, or you're just in a hurry? Are there
right.
any regions that you should keep your eyes out for, or any, you know, types of varietals that people should pay attention to that are a really good price quality value?
Absolutely. No, it's a great question. You're right, because, you know, not everyone is going to hold your hand, even though they should. It's not reality. So you're in a rush. You just want to go to the neighborhood store that may not have that type of service.
Totally.
This week, Eric Asimov of the New York Times, who's a wine pundit I love because he doesn't get mess around with all the jargon, he mentioned, 20 wines around $20, and most of them were from Europe.
Okay.
And there's a reason for that. I mean, I like to focus on Mediterranean areas. So let's say, like, the south of France, okay? Côte d'Aronne, to me, like, beeline right for it. You don't know the merchant. You don't have the time. Go to the Côte d'Aronne. It's usually under $15. The quality to price ratio is always high, and it's kind of one of those crowd pleasing wines. It just has the fruit, the texture that seem to like cross over a lot of different to a lot of different palates. The geek,
I love that.
I'm not so into it, so I think that to me would be like my first place to run to on a desert island,
so useful.
A rush, a terrible wine stained, teeth wine stained merchant. Go to the Côte d'Aronne.
I love a Côte d'Aronne too. And what you answered my question, which was, what's like, is there one wine that almost always has the best price to quality ratio? Is there an equivalent on the white wine side?
Yeah.
How about white wine? Red wine always gives me headaches at the end of the day, and so I drink white wine all year round. Is there anything that makes a good winter white, like a color?
It's all about the passion.
Yeah.
So I think winter whites are really interesting, because I think, when we think of winter, we think of warmth.
Yeah.
And something with a little bit more spice and body.
Yeah.
So I love the great variety Grüner Veltliner from Austria.
Yep.
It has some of the qualities that a Sauvignon Blanc drinker may gravitate towards, but a little bit of more savoriness and warmth that would be great, I think, for the white wine drinker wanting to slake their thirst in the middle of a storm in February, snowstorm in February. And then something else to consider, I think, just like outside that box for a winter white, would be the white wines from the Alsace region of France. So this is a cool northerly region. They make ample, full-bodied whites. And what's great about these wines from France is that the labels say the grape variety. A lot of French wines, they don't say the grape variety in the front, can be intimidating and overwhelming. In Alsace, they say Pinot Blanc or Gewürztraminer or Riesling. So I think that's another place to look for a kind of a warm wintry white.
I have a question about wine cocktails, because something about wine cocktails makes me feel really virtuous. Like, it's not a total cocktail, but I can, it's not like hard liquor, but I'm still having fun. It's more than just a plain old glass of wine. Do you have any favorite wine cocktails?
Absolutely. My absolute favorite, it's called the Pompier.
Okay.
It's spelled Pompier. And basically what it is an aromatized wine, which is vermouth.
Okay.
So it's like a dry vermouth.
Okay.
On the rocks with some cassis and some soda.
Yum.
I mean, it's like the French taxi driver's drink. It's light and refreshing. You don't feel like semi-comatose.
That's exactly what I'm always looking for.
I love it.
That's lovely. That sounds great.
Claire and I are also big fans of sherry and more recently port too. Do you have any favorites or go-tos in that realm?
Yeah, I think in the sherry realm, I've been really geeking out on the Amontillado dry sherry. It's got like a deeper flavor than a Fino, nuttier. I think great for like a wintertime. You think sherry at the end of the meal, but this dry sherry would be great with, if you're a meat eater, like pan-seared duck breast. I love that. Or if you're not a meat eater, like some sort of like herbed infused sauteed mushroom crostini with an Amontillado sherry is absolutely divine. Served a little bit cool, I totally dig it.
Question: what? How do you decide that? Are you like, how do food and wine pairings get decided? Is it like, okay, this is acidic, and the thing is like acidic wines go with umami flavors, or like
Are you looking for a balance or a contrast?
Yeah,
I think you can go one or the other. I mean, I don't get too fussy, really. I don't get too fussy about it. But, like, I think, like, when someone comes into my shop mm-hmm. and says, I'm having something savory, yeah. I always love the idea of, like, echoing an element of a dish.
Okay.
So, like, if you're having lots of tomato sauce that has acidity, go for something with, like, fresh acidity. But, again, this is just a general guideline.
Right.
I've been known to have, you know, French fries, rosemary infused French fries, and a glass of champagne. You know,
yep.
Who knows if it works, but I like.
But you like it,
yeah.
Okay.
What's the next big wine trend? And I mean, trend is such a dumb word, but like, what's going to be the next rosé, the next vino verde, like the next one of these things? Orange wine, biodynamic.
You know, I think it's. You know, like, orange wine absolutely is something that more and more folks are coming into
orange wine.
Inquiring about.
Can you tell us what it is? Can you explain what it is? Because I love it, but I don't know why.
Yeah, no, orange wine is an ancient technique of white wine making, where basically the skins are macerated with the juices for an extended period of time, sometimes, you know, months. So that imbues the wine with this just like, you know, spicy, deep, like almost ineffable quality. So it's almost like if you were to smell it without looking at it, it has the aroma of, let's say, like a red wine, but the weight of a white wine. And they often come from Slovenia or Georgia. There's some in Italy, but that's kind of the most common place for it. So, you know, in terms of like where I think a lot of consumers are going, they're interested, the next kind of maybe trend would be, you know, Slovenian, Croatian, whites and reds. I think you're starting to see more and more fascinating, unique expressions of those wines in the States, and I'm really, you know, excited about them. The price to quality is fantastic.
I have to shout out the Georgian orange wine that I loved, which is on the menu at Four Horsemen in Williamsburg. It was the Okros Kaketi, and I think it might be the only orange wine on the menu at Four Horsemen, but it was so good.
It's awesome. Yeah.
And it was exactly what you described, Michael. It's like got the weight of a white wine, the sort of lightness of a white wine with some of that red wine sort of like almost like more savory depth to it. And I am a red wine drinker. I love red wine, but it does give me a headache, and I find that the orange wine is just a little bit lighter.
It's a great segue. You're right. Yeah. It's totally like meets that kind of like savory thirst that you have, even though you're not kind of gravitating towards drinking reds.
Exactly.
Okay, so sort of to round this out, do you have any dessert wines you love or thoughts on that? I mean, Claire is allergic to like sweet things like this in general, but I do think it can be like a nice thing to whip out at the end of the night to be like, oh, we have this bottle of this. If you don't feel like having something heavy, like a scoop of ice cream or whatever, anything that feels cool and not quite as stodgy as some of that stuff does.
No, absolutely. You know, one, it's pretty thick, but it's a great expression. You were saying how much you love sherry, and a sweeter style of sherry, the Pedro Ximenez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like an ounce or two is enough.
Yeah.
It is like the like magical elixir of the gods. And if you didn't want to put it over ice cream, that's your call. But sprinkle a little bit over some ice cream, maybe an espresso, put it in a mason jar, home run.
That sounds delicious. I do sweet sherries like that, and I have had the Pedro Ximenez are the one sort of
the
like
thing,
sweet
the one thing
wine
you can
I
go.
Can go for. I usually, my go-to sherry is Tio Pepe. It's like really light, and it just feels like a nice cocktail when you come home at the end of the day, and it's not really sweet. It's quite dry, but I do, those sweeter sherries are really nice, but I've never tried them over ice cream. I gotta do it.
My port go-to is RP10. Ramos Pinto, and that stuff's delicious. My husband and I had it at, they saw it on like a fancy restaurant menu recently, and he was so proud of himself that this is what we drink at home. Was like, yes, we're making the right decisions in life.
Nice thing to have your decisions affirmed.
Exactly. Positive reinforcement.
Exactly
all
right.
So, Michael, tell us, do you your wine subscription program, does that ship all over the country?
Yeah, we ship all over the country. In fact, you know, we've got folks from San Francisco to Brooklyn and everywhere in between. We have a website, kingstonwine.com, and our wine shares are available for purchase online, and a beautiful package of something well-designed and cared for arrives at your porch on a monthly basis.
I cannot recommend it enough. If you're not going to buy all of your Christmas presents from ofakind.com, then go buy the rest
it's
from Kingston
Wine. It's also just really good for, like, siblings or
just
parents-in-law or whatever, totally. Where you're like, I don't know what to do. Yeah. You know, this feels like the perfect thing that is a gift all year round.
Exactly. We're happy to facilitate.
Michael, thank you so much.
You were wonderful.
Awesome. You're really good at this. You should have your own radio show talking about wine.
It was a pleasure. Right back at you guys.
All right. Have a great night. And thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been A Few Things with Claire and Erica. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and at heritageradionetwork.org.
You should sign up for our newsletter at ofakind.com. You will get our 10 Things newsletter. This is based on. You should also leave us comments on our iTunes on all that because we like them.
We like the comments.
That's the show.
Bye.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.